I tell you this right up front on Coast to Coast AM tonight. It's not just this show that's going to miss Glenn Kimble. If you've been to the website, coasttocoastam.com, you know Glenn Kimble has passed. Glenn Kimble was a frequent guest on this program. He was one of my favorite guests, both on and off the air on Coast to Coast over the years. And I often said so when people asked me, name some of my favorite guests. Glenn was almost always at the top of the list. It was his enthusiasm, his knowledge, the fact that he was always an engaged, generous guest, always informed. Glenn Kimble would come on and talk about his newest find in the world of ancient manuscripts. One of my favorite shows with Glenn was on the Colburn Bible. This special edition of the Colburn Bible was controversial, and it was a show which was tweaking a lot of people that night. But still, it was filled with both the show, the book, and Glenn, filled with the usual wonder and sense of joy in exploring something unusual, something rarely known, something not often enough discussed. That was Glenn's life in literature. He had Kimball College, which was both a cool online source for people looking for out-of-print stuff, but also a great font of gag material on the air with Glenn. And he always had a great sense of humor about Kimball College. That makes me laugh just thinking about it, how much we teased him about starting his own college named after himself and all of the things we used to play around with on that. I'll miss him a lot. Last couple of times we had him on the air, we could tell something was going on, although he didn't tell us, or at least I wasn't informed. I don't think anybody of the show knew. We started to kind of hear it in his presentation a little bit. And one night I remember saying to him, I said, Glenn, are you like sleepy? I mean, what's going on? Only to find out later on that he was struggling with something. It's that something from which he died. You go to the website at coasttocoastam.com and you'll also see you can download a Glenn Kimble show. I think it's nice of the webmasters to make available a Glenn Kimble classic that you can listen to. A typical interesting program. I was going back over some of the things I keep on my desk from Glenn. The Colburn Bible is one, but I think it was probably about a dozen years ago that Glenn Kimble sent me a copy of Eusebius's Ecclesiastical History, complete and unabridged. This is the writing of the 4th century Eusebius as he talked about the history of the early Christian church. I cannot tell you how often I use this book and how I thought of Glenn every time. I even have the note that he sent me still in the pages here of the Ecclesiastical History. Again, Glenn Kimble died. Many of you might know him as the Burroughs Cave guy. He was famous for introducing the story of the Burroughs Cave, this supposed treasure trove in southern Illinois, which has been much disputed, in the area of the country known as Little Egypt, in the area not far from where Glenn used to teach at Southern Illinois University. There was a Burroughs Cave where they had found, supposedly, treasures from Egypt itself that had been buried there, where ancient Egyptians had come up through the Nile and stored some of the things which they felt they needed to relaunch the Egyptian civilization here in the New World. Cool thought. Same thing with the giants that Glenn would track, or the Bigfoot people, the civilization that Glenn was looking after. He was always on something, the latest something that was coming across his desk that he would get on the air with us. And we loved him for that, and we'll miss him. And I'm so sorry to his family to the people that have been following him for years and supporting him at Kimball College. I was glad to log on tonight and see that the website is still up. Ancient Manuscripts is the website. You can link up to Kimball College through there. But ancientmanuscripts.com still up, and the material still downloadable, including Glenn's autobiography, in three parts, which is very entertaining and worth taking a listen to. It's Learning How to Learn, the Glenn Kimball story. We should all remember that. Coming up tonight, open lines for the first hour. Then an hour from now, the fix is in. The showbiz manipulations of the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, NHL, and NASCAR. Why is this relevant? Well, we just wrapped up the Stanley Cup. We're in the midst of the NBA championship. And there was a goal that was let in today by a goalkeeper in England that people are already online saying, what was that about? How did that goal for the USA get in the net? Just a mistake? Probably. But not after you read the book, The Fix Is In. You'll never look at one of those moments again in sports. I'll tell you more about that next. We'll start taking your open line calls. If you have any Glenn Kimball memories, wouldn't mind sharing those with you too. On Coast to Coast, this is Ian Punnett. Okay, so I want to give you the premise of the book, The Fix Is In. It's distilled as narrowly as I can down to about two or three sentences. And I didn't come across it really perfectly stated until I got to page like 160. But here it is. Let's just assume that professional sports leagues are not just sports entities, but are mere cogs in the greater show business machine. What does that mean? It forces each league to concern itself with increasing market share while maintaining popularity with its original fan base. How can a league do this, especially when the audience has seen and heard it all before? That is a great way of thinking about why the fix is in, or how the fix is in gets started. What are the different forces that get involved with the outcomes of games, the storylines of games? Is it really just a matter of the NBA sits back and they let everything just happen? Just whatever happens, happens. And then they have to make the most of it on the other end, and they have to kind of, you know, try to make sense of it to the viewer? Or are there certain cues that come down from the top that indicate how an outcome would best serve the sport at large? Are there calls made by referees that are influenced by forces other than the pure, simple adjudication of what just happened? That's what we'll talk about coming up next hour. The fix is in. Now, were you watching soccer today? Do you see USA versus England? This is the first round for us of the World Cup. And, England heavily favored. There was, some of the three people that were interviewed before the game, some people said, well, 2-1, the score will be America to England. Somebody else said 1-1. And then one guy said, are you kidding me? This is going to be a blowout. It's going to be 3-1 England. USA is not even going to be in this game. Well, okay, so then you look at it and you say, well, interesting that the game ended 1-1, ended as a tie. So I walk away from it. But that's a tie to the U.S. against England is in some ways perceived as a kind of victory. Anything other than a loss would be a victory. So if you get a tie, if you're the USA, that's pretty big. If you're England, that's shameful. And especially when you look at the goal that was let in by England, it was a simple shot, should have been caught, should never have dribbled behind the goalie into the net. Did the goalie do it on purpose? I don't think so. I watched it. But then you think about, okay, what's at stake if that goal goes in? You have thousands of USA fans that are there in South Africa. You have a new market that they would like to see turn into, a real solidified soccer market, being the United States. We've been on the cusp for years. The rest of the world has cup fever. And here we are, some bars, some places. But, and there's a few of us, right? I'm sure you may have been one of them that made a point to watch today on ABC. And we'll watch again when USA plays again. But you think of what could happen if USA goes farther up the World Cup. Could it end up changing the way that soccer is thought of or followed here in the United States? Wow, wouldn't that be amazing? So a coincidence? Probably just a coincidence that the shot dribbles in, it ends up 1-1, and USA will advance, have another round, obviously one or two maybe games before it's over, and all of the fans and all of the corporate interests like ABC are, you know, through the moon for what happened today on TV. It's probably just a coincidence that that happened and the goal just dribbled in. But it may not always be that way, that it's just a coincidence. And the author coming up after the top of the hour has done his research. And he says the fix is in, and he can prove it in many different and important cases that of sports for reasons just like we talked about with soccer that happened here in the United States that became, if you'll pardon the term, game changers for both the game that you were watching, but also the future of the league, the finances of the owners, and of the players themselves. Are we always watching a pure sports, you know, competition, or are we watching a competition between what could happen and what would be best if it happened for the financial interests of those involved? And we'll leave it there for now, but it's coming up next hour on Coast to Coast. Ronald is in Oregon, west of the Rockies, as we do open lines for the rest of this hour on Coast to Coast. Hey, Ronald.
Hey. I just called in for a long-time listener, first-time caller. My concern about the oil spill.
Yeah.
I worked at Cherry Growers, and I did all the stainless steel pumps, and I built them, and so kind of know how much, how the pumps kind of work, but not in the pressure they're talking about. I was wondering, you had a listener, another caller on there. He was, I think he was from Canada, and he was talking about the they needed like a finger valve their valves at 40 degree angles, and it so when the oil comes up through it, it helps close it.
Okay.
There's
a question. I wasn't sure what the question was. You said there was a listener, and he said this thing. What was the question?
I was wondering if they're taking blueprints from people that know, like, did he ever get through the BP? If somebody wrote up a blueprint on how to make a valve.
I don't know much about it other than what you've stated. But I will say this then, that you might like, and it's an act of faith. I'm going to say this right now. The way it's looking, tomorrow night, we're going to have two guests on Coast to Coast, one of whom says there is plenty of oil. It's a myth. Peak oil is a myth. There is plenty of oil. In fact, not only is there plenty of oil, there's probably too much oil. And this is an example of that in the Gulf. But that there are other reasons why we should be suspicious of the oil industry, but it's not because they're running out. And then another guest will say, indeed, we're running out. And our future, we can see the hole in our pocket coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. We'll get more to that. But first, Jim is in California. He's waiting. First-time caller line. Hey, Jim.
Hello. Hello, hello. Yeah, that topic about the sixth games really intrigues me as to the time the San Diego Chargers went to the Super Bowl.
Right.
I mean, that was just totally unreal. Every game was a fluke. I mean, there's no way they should have won any of those games.
Now, hold on. I'm guessing you were just listening to Wayne Resnick on KFI, right? Because we were just talking about that. So before we went on the air here on Coast to Coast, I was talking with Wayne about this. The phenomenon of games that go to the sixth and seventh game in a series And that there really shouldn't, like, in some cases it just defies explanation how you end up in a sixth or a seventh game, but how sports loves that, so that there's a storyline that's being told, and it inevitably requires more games than a lot of people feel it possibly should. So you're saying San Diego, though, was an example of that in what sport?
Football.
Okay. Yeah, because they went. Well, that's just the Super Bowl. How does that tie into what we're talking about?
No, all the games that took them to the Super Bowl.
Ah.
There's no way they should have won any of those, and it was just the most weirdest, stupidest mistakes by the other team. I mean, it's like there had to be some, you know, intervention there or something. And there's just no way. There's just no way they should have won the Super Bowl.
Yes, I think that. Well, I'll ask the author about that coming up next hour. He's got a whole chapter on unlikely outcomes, things that happened the way they did. And then, you know, we don't have proof necessarily of all of these, but we do have a lot of very interesting questions and many answers next hour. The Fix is in about the dark, soft underbelly of professional sports. Joe is in Boston on Coast to Coast. Joe?
Good morning. How are you doing? Sorry, I haven't called in for a while. I got three topics. I was in the hospital with a tailspin. I almost wanted to end my life. My father died. We made peace.
Sorry you were in the hospital. Glad you're okay. And go ahead and let's put your best topic up front. Okay?
I wanted to give my condolences to Glenn Kimball. And I wanted to say hi to my friend Karen, who's a new Coast listener. She's been Coast for quite a while, but I just found out. My topic is on the oil thing, and I wanted you to comment on it. They had a thing on Fox, whether you agree or disagree, they were demonstrating ways and polymers that could sap that stuff up, and they had people putting their hands in oil, and they were showing it, and they had a machine which would pick up the oil, and it would do ultrasound, and they had all sorts of crystals and stuff. Why do you think the government is not getting involved in doing this?
I think you will see that. I think there's a trade-off. As soon as the government gets involved, of course, then the theory switches.
Sitting around doing nothing. You know, I mean, real, not doing nothing, doing very little, and all this stuff is available. These people have tried to talk to BP in there.
Joe, I'm going to finish that thought. If you want to know my answer, I'll finish that thought.
Right.
When they get involved, it'll become a very different paradigm. But I will say, it is a private pipe. It is a private company. If the government gets involved, I think what they're afraid of is that the BP will be happy to hand it over and go, okay, you guys fix it then. By the government not getting involved, it puts the pressure on BP to be the one to invest the money to fix it. It's one thing for the government to come in and say, well, all right, now we'll take over and we'll try to stop it. I think BP would be more than happy to hand them the keys to the broken pipeline and walk away. So I don't know that it's just a matter of why can't the government do it. Good question is BP really doing all that it can? I see what you're saying in another sense. There are really good, reasonable, seems like, things out there that they could be trying more of. And they should be trying everything, something every day. There's this idea about, well, we'll wait a week and then we'll try something else and we'll do. I think it's not just hurting BP. Obviously, it's hurting the ocean. It's driving me fairly crazy. But I think for now, I still want BP to be the one to fix it. It's their problem. It's not the government's problem, per se. It's becoming our problem as a nation. But BP ought to fix it. And they should be, whether they go bankrupt doing it, I don't care. They got to fix it, and they ought to pay for the people on the Gulf Coast. And they ought to be trying, as you suggest, any single idea, no matter how crazy it is. And they ought to try an idea a day, maybe an idea an hour, until they come up with the magic formula for it. All right, so next half hour, open lines. But again, a reminder, tomorrow night we will be talking about oil on Coast to Coast. I'll be hosting, and we'll be talking about how one guest says there's plenty of oil and he can prove it. Another guest says oil is just about to run out and he can prove it. We'll get to that coming up tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett. All right, next half hour here of Open Lines, and then we'll talk about what major league sports of any type doesn't want you to even contemplate. That those storylines they love so much might actually come down from the top, or at least they might get some very important nudges along the way. I mean, gosh, does it get any better? Is some of these things that have happened in Major League sports, is it just a coincidence that right after Major League Baseball, for example, was in such trouble, that suddenly batters started knocking all these home runs out of the park? Oh, it was steroids. Oh, and now it's a juiced ball and a juiced bat, maybe, or what? I mean, it just when the, just as the popularity of the sport was waning, suddenly all these guys stepped up to the plate with these big giant muscles, and the people at the top knew nothing about it. But sure, it was sure bringing fans back into the ballpark when Mark McGwire and Sammy Sosa, started their home run chase. Then we find out later on there's steroids, there's juiced bats involved. Is it a coincidence? Did nobody else know about it? Could the owners have not have known about it? Was it just some rogue players? Well, the fix is in. It's coming up after the top of the hour on Coast to Coast, and we'll talk that further. Also coming up, we'll get to all of your open line calls. It could be that it has nothing to do with the passing of Glenn Kimball, certainly, but I want to bring it to your attention again. Take a look online at coasttocoastam.com and link up and grab that free download they're offering of a great Glenn Kimball show. If you didn't know who he was on Coast to Coast, that's a good way to get to know him. And then, of course, link up to his website and take a look at all the marvelous things that he's offered to all of us over the years. Glenn Kimball has left us, but I'd like to think that his spirit lives on Coast to Coast AM. This is Ian Punnett. East of the Rockies, John is in Lima, Ohio, open lines on Coast to Coast.
Hi, Ian.
Hey.
Have you ever had just I'm sure everyone's had a random thought just drop into their mind when they're hearing about something else?
Yes.
When you were talking about the fixes in, the instant you started explaining what it was about, the oil situation dropped in my mind with the United States and England. And I'm sitting back thinking, well, why would the fix be in a situation like a game between England and the United States? Well, it has morphed into an international kind of a thing between Britain and the United States.
That's a really interesting point.
Yeah, it was just eerie how that just dropped into my mind, and it's like, I'm either nuts,
right?
My mind's just working overtime.
It's a great connection. What's interesting about that, of course, is that we're not supposed to say British Petroleum.
Yeah.
Because that's not the name of the company anymore, and political leaders in England were taking great exception to the number of times that American officials referred to it as British Petroleum. They're like, hey, stop saying British. It's like, okay. It's not their official name anymore, but everybody knows it is British Petroleum. Yeah. I mean, I just thought that was funny. But that's a really interesting connection.
What happened to Glenn Kimball? I mean, I heard something to the effect of liver problems or something.
I'll be honest with you and say he was a fairly private guy on stuff like that. And even when at some point we reached out to find out more, he wasn't going to talk a lot about it. So I don't know what we're allowed to talk about in terms of honoring his wishes on that. But it was a degenerative problem that caused him to lose a lot of energy, and he was really struggling, and it's sad because he had gotten married recently, and even he had a lot of reasons to hang in there, and I know he gave it a valiant fight, but the family members of Glenn Kimball are listening, just know we were just Lisa, one of the producers here of the show. The producer of the show was listening, and we're both talking about that, how it is that, she remembers him as being the first guest she ever booked on Coast to Coast. She kind of, discovered him in a way, got him on the show. And I think he was one of the first that I ever interviewed. I know I did others before Glenn, but I started taking him on as a regular guest on my my first flight on Coast to Coast as a Sunday night host, and just loved every minute of it. Always look forward to the Glenn interviews. Johnny is in San Diego on Coast to Coast. Johnny?
Yeah. I want to say, man, I used to be a handler, and I want you to know that if you think that the players are, you know, responsible for fixing games, I'm telying you right now, the players are trying their hearts out, man. Athletes, they don't come to lose. They don't lose on cue, you know. They don't get the big contracts by losing when they're supposed to. But on the other hand, certain people of influence that lay heavy bets on certain things might be able to get to an official. All you got to do is get the one, you know, and you can influence the outcome of a game.
Well, okay, well, first of all, I mean, I think empirically we know factually that's probably an overstatement to say athletes don't do that. In fact, we have court cases, we have testimony, we have books, we have people who have confessed. I mean, you have not just college players, but pro players. You have a whole history of professional players that have been throwing games. And so when you say it doesn't happen, I'm not sure what basis you use for that.
Well, I'm not saying it absolutely doesn't happen, but I'm saying by and large, those guys are trying their hearts out, man.
Well, I think a lot of them are, but just like you said, it doesn't take many to influence the outcome of a game.
But
so you can have 40 guys on a team, and all it takes is one key player.
I'm in San Diego, and you had a guy from San Diego on earlier, and I want to tell you about the Holy Roller game. Now, you know, that was a bad call, and it changed, you know, the rules of football. But, you know, Ken Stabler himself admitted that they practiced that play all week.
You know, John, I think we could probably slice that pretty thinly and say this did or didn't happen, and maybe some things that sure seem fixed were just pure coincidences. I have no empirical knowledge of that. I'm going to leave that up to the guest coming up. And then, of course, we'll do some questions for him later on, and I hope you're listening to that part because I know he'll get challenged. But he makes some pretty good cases here. And the book is The Fix Is In. You can link up to it at coasttocoastam.com. Take an informed look at that because there's a lot about gambling. There's a lot about officiating. There's a lot about players. And there's a lot about corporate interests of the owners themselves, what they have at stake, and what they've been able to do by manipulating the media, by in collusion with the broadcasters, the amount of the story that they're able to control. I mean, we know this to be true if you're a sports fan, that when you're watching the game, the people who are doing the play-by-play and the color are very careful about the way they talk about what's happening in sports. They don't lay it out on the line. They don't say things. They speak euphemistically because they're employed by the machine, as it were, not as journalists who are just simply telling it as it is, but part of a bigger picture, part of the entertainment industry. They are much more entertainers than they are journalists, and we sometimes forget about that because they may have a journalistic background, but there's a lot of stories they could be talking about that they don't. Let me get to Jeremy, first-time caller line in Cleveland. Go ahead, Jeremy.
Hey, in and out. Hey, how's it going?
Good, real quick.
Good. I'm calling. I'm from Cleveland. I mean, as you probably know, we've experienced a lot of heartache here.
Yes.
Real lot of heartache with sports. And more recently, you know, what may become the LeBron James conspiracy. I wanted to maybe get your thoughts on it and hope maybe last a guest a little bit later on what his thoughts are and, you know, how it all ties in and everything that happened.
Well, explain it for people who aren't basketball fans or from Cleveland.
Well, it's pretty much, you know, the talk of the town is LeBron James, you know, staying or going. And it just looks like everything, you know, he didn't look like the same player. And there's a lot of talk around town and about, you know, certain influences basically get inside his head and, you know, maybe some sort of collaboration going on, another team trying to get in his head to get him to leave. But just want to kind of get his thoughts on that and, you know, what he thought about rumors about something with his teammates that had to do with his mom.
Well, you know, I don't know anything about his mom, but so you're speaking too esoterically for me to follow there. But I know that there's been a series of LeBron James controversies. I think there was a LeBron James conspiracy last year that's different than the LeBron James conspiracy this year. If somebody wants to Google that, they'll see what I'm talking about. Let me get to Ralphus in Ohio, too, on Coast to Coast. Ralphus?
Yes, great show, Ian. Great show. You are an intelligent man who thinks outside the box. That's why I think you're great.
Thank you. That's nice.
You are awesome. You are so awesome. You helped me realize how unawesome I am. So the oil spill. The oil spill.
That's funny.
Will last, like, what, 55, 60 days?
Yeah, I forgot. Something in there. Yep.
It's so blatantly obvious that this is an alien attack. Would you say that that is not out of the realm of possibility?
Well, explain how the aliens are involved, and it's not just human stupidity once more run amok.
I don't know these things, but come on. Something this big is of forces outside of this world, I think. Would
okay.
you say that's out, within the realm of possibility?
I'll go with you, but how? I mean, why is this not a case of traditional human hubris where once more Icarus-like we think somehow we are in control of something which we should be reminded of every day. We enter humbly into the world of the ocean and space, and we should stop thinking that we can control these all of these elements like fire, gas, all of these things that are primal elements to the formation of the earth, and we can just cut and run and we don't have to be careful when we're dealing with them. I think this to me is like the movie Godzilla. It was just we forget what we can create. It's not hard for us to create a monster like this
beyond our control. That's why I think there's otherworldly forces that are responsible.
All right, well, I'll keep an eye on that aspect of the story. I look forward to hearing more about that. Matt is in Phoenix City, Alabama, on Coast to Coast. Matt?
Good evening, Ian. My condolences on hearing about your friend's death.
Yeah, thank you. Glenn Kimball, great guest on this show.
Hey, sounds interesting. I'm going to check him out, see what some of his writings and things.
Yeah, you'd like it.
Curious if you've heard. I haven't really been researching any, but I'm curious if you've heard. Has anything like this Gulf oil leak happened before? And if so, I mean, you got kind of a cynical program on tonight. And as the older I get, it's so easy to be cynical. I'm just wondering if they use the dispersants. And I always thought, and science always tells us, oil rises up in water. And
right.
As far as I know, this is the first time that they've seen oil beneath the surface, and it actually is sinking in some cases.
I think there has to be let me just jump in and say, I think there's a composition level issue about the type of oil that comes up. Oil isn't oil isn't oil isn't oil. So I that's something I heard about this oil that was different from past oil spills. That sounds fishy, but I thought that in some ways they've done more research on this particular oil spill to see that these clouds linger longer on the way up, that it's not that they aren't eventually going to end up, but they're lingering on the way up. Does that not sound right? Isn't that what you've heard?
No, I agree with you. Yes, there are different kinds of oil. There are different grades of sweet crude and light sweet crude and that
right.
sort of stuff, where there are higher concentrations of the hydrocarbons as opposed to a muddier stuff that has to be refined a lot more.
So you already know 10 times more than I know. So you're asking the wrong guy. I should be asking you. But, of course, here's the deal. Literally dozens, if not hundreds, of oil spills. That have come from rigs, like this,
I'm wondering if there have been some, right at the ocean floor,
right,
that have leaked and that they've used these dispersants and they haven't told anybody about it. I mean, that's my cynical aspect.
That's a fair question. I don't know. In fact, I've been told right now that there's another, I don't know if you've been following the story, that there is also another oil well that's spewing right now. And that dispersants are being used on it even as we speak. But this, the Deepwater Horizon right? Deep, isn't that what it's called? That's the one that's getting all of the attention. Meanwhile, not too far away, there's oil in the water and dispersants being sprayed on it while nobody's looking for another oil derrick spill, too. Jack is in Newport, North Carolina on Coast to Coast. Jack, open lines.
Hey, good evening. Deus te amat, Mr. Ponnet.
And I do, too.
I wonder if you think that Chernobyl was a conspiracy.
What was the conspiracy that you've heard? What are you thinking of in that, Ray?
I heard that the UN was looking for an excuse to find anything on the Soviets, and they put operatives in there to make the steam explosion.
No, hadn't ever heard that. They put operatives at Chernobyl, the UN did?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
Yeah.
I don't believe it myself, but...
Yeah, I've never heard that. I mean, what's interesting for me is actually, again, it's sort of maybe Chernobyl has more to do with the Gulf Coast in the sense that it's a lot of you cut enough corners, you know, and you're gonna make a cut that you can't undo. And that's what seems like it's happening in the Gulf, and that, you know, also a different kind of energy, but maybe the same philosophy. We got this. We got this. We don't have to use our redundant safety systems. We got this. I'll look into that one. I've never heard of operatives at Chernobyl, but I love operatives in any story. So I'll ask. Pat is in League City, Texas on Coast to Coast. Pat?
Good morning, Ian. I have a question. Why is there not a two-pronged attack on the oil leak? One to plug the leak, the second one to contain the oil spill. And who would be in charge of it?
Well, I know you said to contain it, meaning aren't they trying to do that right now by dropping all of this stuff and to suck up the oil?
They're doing an extremely poor job of it.
Well, they are, but I think it's an attack. It is a two-pronged attack.
Yes, but who's in charge of it?
BP.
I believe that BP, my thought is that BP should be responsible for the cost of cleaning up the oil. However, that's our water. That's not BP's water. And where does our federal government come in doing something? Something. They could, right now, Obama could allow a pass of the Jones Act and allow in ships that are able to suction up the oil, but he's not doing it.
I didn't know that you could. In the sense you say suction up the oil, you mean like what Kevin Costner's ship design? You mean like that? I think they should. I don't know that he's not allowing it, but I'll take a look at the Jones Act. I don't know about the Jones Act. But I know this, BP is responsible for it. BP ought to fix it. And I think it's a lot harder to get money out of somebody later with a bill than it is to stand there and make them actually do it themselves. You know, I mean, I've been told that the federal government doesn't exactly have like the big anti-spill machinery division. You know, it's not like there's a bunch of stuff waiting somewhere in a harbor to get deployed. But we will be talking about this coming up tomorrow night. Slightly different angle, maybe, but we'll talk about the oil spill in terms of peak oil versus we've got plenty of oil. Maybe the story of this oil spill is this would spill for centuries, kind of taking out the whole peak oil theory. We'll talk about that tomorrow night on Coast to Coast. In the meantime, the fix is in. Talk about professional sports next on Coast to Coast. This is Ian Punnett.